we were doing that anyway.
Oh, so that was happening in any case.
Just Easter holidays, yeah, school holidays. Mm, so cool, we're going to Lanzarote on Sunday for 11 days, which actually my wife and I worked out is probably the longest holiday that we've actually ever done together. We were thinking back, no, that one was a week. That one was a week. We don't remember ever going away this long. So what,
even pre-kids?
Yeah, pre-kids as well.
Wow.
We're both very career focused, and so we haven't felt like doing more than a week at a time is right. I think we went on a cruise once, which was about 10 days maybe, but anyway, yeah, definitely need the holiday.
Yeah, I think it's weird. I think 1 week holidays are good. 2 week holidays are kind of like a suboptimal for me, because you end up like either getting bored or you get so comfortable with the holiday lifestyle that, you know, it's like it's very, very difficult to come back to anything. I've never been a mega holiday taker anyway, although I am away to Australia obviously tomorrow, right? Fingers crossed.
How long?
3 weeks.
Cool.
Yeah, it's not a holiday though. I've got like a couple of talks to do. I've got a couple of things. I mean, it's basically I've got three hard points where I've got to go and like do stuff. But the rest of the time it should be just like seeing people and, you know, meeting a few folks that I haven't seen for a long time and what have you. So yeah, it's going to be really cool.
Will you get a Hong Kong stop on the way down or the way back?
No chance. They've still got a 21-day quarantine, mate. So there's no... I think they're going to relax it, because I think they've realised that if you keep doing that, there's no one's going to come in and out ever. And if that's the case, though, it's like you can't just take an additional 3 weeks. That'd be 6 weeks. And then what time? So yeah, it's not feasible. But yeah, let's see what happens, you know, let's see what happens. Anyway, we're live, everybody. Welcome to Brain Food Live on Air, bringing this to you every Friday. It's episode 149. We do this show every week, folks. So I hope you are enjoying it as much as we are. We've got a super exciting show for you today, because it actually started from a conversation I think maybe you posted somewhere online, Adam, talking about networking and, you know, how to do it online remotely. I think you're very pro the idea, it's like more efficient, etc. And then a bunch of other people were saying, you know, I'm not meeting people, I'm not going out and having drinks and, you know, getting that depth of the conversation you have six whiskeys in, you know, that kind of depth of relationship building, especially in British culture, maybe no longer as big a deal. So it just popped into my mind, especially rewinding back to my recruiting days, agency days particularly. It was like mega important to be going out all the time, mega important to be going out in person, lunches, after dinner, all those types of things in order to build relationships. And what does that world look like if we are no longer doing it? So if we've shifted to a remote setting, which I think we've all agreed, we all, you know, like this idea of remote, what does it look like now that we are, how do we build networks in this new format? Anyway, that is the topic of the conversation. Anyway, before we kick off, just a quick sound check as usual. Crowdcast, if you can hear me on Crowdcast, please let me know. Give me a comment on the chat stream there on the right-hand side of your screen. Let me know if the audio is okay. We should be blasting this out on LinkedIn. So, folks, if you can hear me on LinkedIn, can you please let me know? Just indicate somewhere on a comment to say, Hung, I can hear you. Please get on with it. We should be going live also on Facebook, which I've totally lost track of, and also Twitter as well, which is good stuff. Okay, looks like we're getting some comments back to say, yes, people can hear us okay, so we can carry on. Right, quick word to our sponsors. I want to say a quick shout out to our mates at Join Talent. Join Talent, no one has sponsored Brain Food more than Join Talent this year. They are sponsoring the Brain Food Lives, the newsletters, the Facebook group. They're everywhere. And not only this, they're just like randomly trying to sponsor good stuff as well. I'm doing an event immediately after this one, which is just an impromptu charity fundraiser for displaced people in Ukraine. Joint Talent with the first company say, yeah, we'll sponsor that. So hat tip to Katrina, Kevin, and all those folks down there. They are kind of next generation RPO. So if you're looking for help in any way, scaling your team, if you're struggling and you need a bit of support, jointtalent.co.uk, go and check them out. They seem to be doing great stuff right now. Okay, let kept Adam Gordon quiet for so long, which is, you know, difficult to do the best of times. But, mate, really good to see you. And as I was saying before we kicked off the show, I'm, like, delighted to hear the news. I wonder whether you could just actually tell the audience what news it is in case people don't know.
Yeah, sure. So I outside of being, like, occasional wingman on Brain Food Live, I was CEO and co-founder of a company called Candidate ID, which is a recruitment technology. And we sold our business on Monday to iSIMS. Announced it to our team on Tuesday morning and announced it like to the wider industry and anybody else that cares on Tuesday at lunchtime. So it's been I've gone from having a team of 22 people to having 1,300 new colleagues, half of whom have connected me already on LinkedIn, and put like times in my diary to meet. And so it's going to take a bit of time to really navigate this much, much bigger organization. There are 4,000 customers, and it's very exciting. So just one thing to say, which is that my co-founder Scott and I started Candidate ID on a mission to really make recruitment better with marketing automation technology. And 5 years later, we remain the only marketing automation technology provider in our industry. And with iSIMS now, our intention is to go from having proven the concept, brought in quite a few customers, but to go from here to 1,000 customers, we needed to do one of two things. And one of them was sell our business at this point to a company like iSIMS. And when I say a company like iSIMS, there wasn't really a better alternative for us. iSIMS was the best option. For all sorts of different reasons. So very, very exciting. But, you know, never anything happening that stops me from joining Brain Food Live if requested.
I was counting you out already. I was like saying, okay, you know, usually I bother you on Facebook or something and say, hey Adam, we're on 5 minutes. I didn't do it this time because I thought, you know what, this guy's probably drunk somewhere or he's, you know, he's doing something else. It's the wrong time to call him to do a video live stream. He's like, you got other things to do. I was like prepared to just solo fly this one. But always great to have you back. And hopefully you'll still be able to do it. But I do understand if you're struggling to do it, by the way, because suddenly your responsibilities have totally changed as a result of taking on this role. Presumably, there'll be a senior exec role somewhere within the company. And as you say, there's now thousands of inputs and contact points that you now have to do. And truth is, you're probably going to be busier than you were before. So, you know, like I say, Adam, we probably should have this conversation privately, but I'm happy. I think you're happy to do it as well. Happy publicly. You're always going to be number one co-pilot. But if you're in a situation where it gets tough or is struggling, just let me know. And that's no biggie. You know what I'm saying? So I
just like my personality is going to remain exactly the same, but I might not be able to swear online as much and, you know, slag off other businesses in our industry and, you know, be controversial.
You've signed terms with the US company now, right? So you're going to have to be like properly locked in and NDA'd up and all this type of stuff now. So.
Well, actually, very specifically, I am now an executive of a US company which has filed its paperwork to float on the NASDAQ. So I definitely need to keep my nose clean.
Yeah. Let's not like sink the share price with some bad chat on Brain Food Live. Anyway, listen, let's get on with the show, Adam. We'll catch up. By the way, there's another show to be had, which is what happens when you sell a company. Because I now know quite a few founders that have successfully exited. Richard Collins, Werner Val, should I say, over at FirstBird. Yeah. So it's like, okay. And he was messaging me and he was saying, oh, I actually don't know what to do myself. It's like there's a big peak, massive relief, obviously. And then it's like, now what? It's like, oh, am I still in or not? You know, that decision needs to be had. And anyway, conversation for another time. Listen, Adam, I'm not sure. I'm pretty certain you have not read the newsletter last week. If you have, then okay, I'll be hugely impressed. Okay, give us a couple of things that was interesting in the Brain Food last week, mate.
Yeah, the BBC one about sexist dress codes, really interesting. And I can tell you why it's so interesting to me is because my wife made contact with my kid's school and said, why is it that our son wears a navy blazer and our daughter wears a light blue blazer? Why are they wearing different colored blazers? And the response back was, well, this is this tradition. And my wife said, all you're doing here is dividing boys and girls. So, like, could you maybe have a plan for stopping doing that? So this is a topic that I'm really interested in. But of course, that's not exactly what the content was about. It was about, why does the guy in TGI Fridays wear a pair of like trousers with braces and the girl wears, you know, a skirt or whatever, you know, maybe not TGI Fridays, but why is the dress code maybe just certainly not in favor of females in some cases? So it's a really interesting topic, and things need to change. We need more parity.
You know what? It's very controversial. I remember going back into, again, way back when, into my recruiting early days, that sort of girls were instructed minimum 3-inch heels, lipstick on, makeup on. And this is by a female CEO, by the way. She was the one like ruling this. And it was like, okay, you know, that was 2000s. It was like not really a controversial thing. It was still a little bit edgy to say. And I remember some of my friends at the time, the friends that were girls that had this type of like stuff coming at them were like a little bit disappointed at this conversation. But you imagine how much we've changed two decades down the line. It's like, it becomes like really strange to even insist on this. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's also uniforms, of course, you know, particularly in the catering, as you mentioned, oftentimes that's gendered. There's all kinds of things that are really interesting about clothing. But taking another view, clothing is inherently gendered, though, as it has been historically. And it's not necessarily a case that we want to go, you know, to Mao-era China, where everyone's wearing exactly the same thing, because, you know, we want to absolutely get rid of gender, because that was the idea behind that type of communism, to change the sort of idea that there is this type of separation between, you know, proletarian woman and proletarian man. So I think on one hand, we have to preserve people's right to wear what they want. But on the other, we've got to be, you know, careful that we're treating people fairly and reasonably. You know, you can't expect people to be dressed in a certain way that's uncomfortable, dangerous, or they feel uncomfortable in and stuff like that. I think, you know, you've got to give employees some sort of choice, an option. Even if there is a uniform, maybe they can choose whether they want to wear trousers or skirt or whatever it might be. Okay, really interesting stuff. By the way, BBC has some really interesting stuff on work. So I recommend you follow stuff, the podcast, and also BBC for Work as well. Okay, give us one more, Adam.
Use of LinkedIn events for lead gen.
Mm.
So immediately I was thinking, this is like going to be like so random and non-targeted, but what it's telling you to do is there's the whole thing. You don't do the whole thing that's in there. Some of it is not really all that useful, I think, but some of it is quite interesting. So you can get to see the attendees of any event on LinkedIn if you register for the event. If you don't, you don't get to see that. I really believe in the concept of, when you're marketing anything, I really believe in the concept of identifying your total addressable market and then doing something to create awareness and education and consideration and, you know, taking them through a kind of funnel type of approach. And this is why, you know, immediately I looked at this and went, it's just random, it's just whoever turns up, random selection. And it's kind of a non-sophisticated way of doing things. However, that then got me to thinking about do it yourself, build your own events, get your hiring managers out there hosting events about technical subjects, about skills for business analysts, about, you know, new applications for a particular type of, you know, software program, new ways of doing, you know, InfoSec, things like that. And what you're going to do potentially if you do that, and you probably have to do a lot of it for them, set up the event, just make sure that they're comfortable being on a camera and get them, you know, into it. If you can concierge them doing it, then actually anybody that is coming and joining it, they are people that you should be trying to bring into your talent pipeline. So going and finding ones and attending them, I think, is pretty random. But actually building your own is something that could be a very, very useful tactic.
I think LinkedIn events are one of those where, like, the obviously dominant player in this market should be LinkedIn, because they have such an audience. The distribution is massive. You've already got a pre-built list of people you can invite if you wanted to. So, you know, there's no reason why they're not the dominant player. The first thing you do when you set up any event is, oh, let's go on LinkedIn. But it's another one of those things that I think they've neglected. They've just chucked it out there. And they haven't really thought about how to improve the experience from an event producer's point of view, how to make it easier to get it out there, and how to get it out to more people. And the reason, by the way, why Bring Food Live is never a LinkedIn event, even though I live stream to LinkedIn, is because it's just too much friction for me to do it. Setup event is difficult. You got to put pictures in there. You got to, you know, it's from scratch. You got to build the design of it from scratch, which I totally get from a customization point of view. But really what you want is just to switch the thing on as quickly as possible and say, this is happening now. And then bang it out as a link or somewhere where people can go into. Maybe even have a pre-select bunch of people you can invite, but you have to individually invite people, right? So, you know, there's lots of things that I think are in the way from it being absolutely the number one tool that everyone would use to do events. But yeah, maybe they don't care. Maybe they've got the money from other sources, right? So this is small potatoes for them. But yeah, let me know what you think, folks. Have you ever set up a LinkedIn event and has it been successful for you? I think it's been a disappointment, but you let me know whether you've had a good experience with setting up a LinkedIn event. Okay, give us one more, Adam.
Right, so... I find it pretty ridiculous that, you know, we're now in a world where you've got 5 billion or whatever it is people in the world, and we've got another 5 billion deepfakes online. So, I mean, you see them on LinkedIn, and I know, like, I get an invite to connect with somebody, and I look at the picture and I go, yeah, you look perfect. Like, you don't look like a supermodel. You don't look unattractive. You just look quite perfect, and I
you can't tell that. Like, you can't tell a LinkedIn. You can't tell a deep fake by eye, mate. I reckon.
I feel like I can. However, this article says you can't, and it also says that synthetic, you know, AI-built synthetic photo images of people are actually more trustworthy as well. I guess they can get like big eyes or whatever the characteristics of a, you know, trustworthy looking person is, and they can just put this in and then they can start scamming you for whatever reason it is, such as to try and work out what jobs that you're working on or something like that. So it's an interesting subject, and it's not something that I'm going to be getting involved in now.
Yeah, it was super interesting. I've just shared it in the chat stream, by the way, folks. And what was really interesting for me on this particular bit of research was that we seem to trust these deepfakes more than normal human beings, because the software has been able to work out what kinds of faces are more trustworthy. So in other words, we like faces that have, you know, the right proportion of distance between the eyes and the nose and all this classic stuff. What is, you know, a person that is trustworthy? Eyes too close together, not trustworthy, that kind of stuff. So they can optimize for the deepfakes to position the major features in such a way that it looks kind of friendly. Features too sharp, people get intimidated by, you know, the cheekbones or the jawline. No, is like plump it up a little bit, make it a little bit softer and friendlier. We prefer that person. So it just reminds me a lot about how problematic this is in recruiting, because we will subliminally be making these assessments when we interview people on video, right? You know, let's say you appear in a certain way. In fact, I remember a time where we had criticism when you, me and Andy Foote were on screen and all of us had too much facial hair. And people weren't happy with that. It was like, okay, yes, it was very non-gendered in that particular moment, but it was a special show where we were just interviewing Andy. And the reality of it is the faces was enough to cause people to have a problem with it. Now, you think what happens when you're recruiting candidates and, you know, I mean, you can't ask people to do plastic surgery on this. You know, this is how people are. But you also can't blame the human observer to make these prejudicial judgments. This is something that we don't know. We literally have no consciousness of it. So big argument to say that we need to have some software to help us with this, even though we're also deeply uncomfortable with, you know, assessment tech in that space. But anyway, go ahead and read it. It's been super interesting. Okay. Let's, I think that's about it. Go on. You want to say something?
I was going to say one more quick one, because it really links in nicely into the main subject of the, of Brainfood Live today. And that's the thing around the key decisions about the future of working from home.
Right, yes.
I just really quickly on this one, there's loads of interesting facts in this. And if you've got problems as a recruiter with candidates turning down opportunities because your company's got a policy of you got to work in the office, or you're not allowed to work in the office, or whatever it is, there's a load of interesting stats in this article which will help you create some arguments to achieve influence with your hiring managers, or, you know, HR, or whoever it is that sets the policy around where people should work. I find it interesting to notice that the number of people going back to offices has gone up, but, you know, over the last couple of months, but it's not going up fast. And I also find, I find a whole bunch of different things interesting in this, like the average person working from home is saving 70 minutes a day on minimum commuting time. I mean, 70 minutes is like, you know, you can get so much done in 70 minutes. And I've been more productive, certainly, by not having to travel to my office. And my office is only 15 minutes away. So it's Julia, it's the one that Hung's just posted on the thread, right above your comment there.
Yeah, by the way, Julia, and this is to everybody who's listening, this is a wonderful presentation. I think it's the, for my money, the best presentation that I've read so far about the state of work from home, state of remote, up to date to 2022. And the guy does a great YouTube presentation. He's delivered the presentation, and it's on YouTube. And just go ahead and listen to it. I think he's just nailed it in terms of where we're at with it, what the problems are, and what managers need to do. There's absolutely no question that this is something everyone needs to be downloading and reading. Okay, let's move on to the show, Adam. Let's talk about this topic. You definitely have had commentary on this because I think you inspired it in the first instance. Yeah, networking. I mean, you seem to be very happy with the remote networking angle. Do you want to explain your position, what that is, and why you think it's a positive thing?
Yeah, I so somebody posted something on the Brainfood Facebook group a couple of weeks ago, and I posted a response to it, which some people really vehemently disagreed with and some people completely did agree with. So the conversation was about, you know, the opportunity to do networking is totally gone down because so many people are working from home now. And I was thinking about it going, nah, I meet probably more people now that I'm working from home than I did when I was traveling every week. Because instead of being on a plane or an airport or in an Uber, I'm probably taking those 70 minutes extra every day to like talk to people. And so, you know, somebody made the comment that, well, that's that you might be meeting more people, but are you actually networking more? And I am, because I'm hosting meetups, I'm attending other people's meetups, and I don't personally feel the need to be like in the room with the person, shaking hands in the flesh, and, you know, sharing Lagavulins with them to feel like I've met that person and got a good connection with them. And I'm gonna tell you the truth here, I've just sold my business without having met anybody at iSIMS in person, apart from people that I already knew before.
You've never
until I've not met Steve in person. No, we've met. I mean, we've met online many times, and we know each other really well. But we've never been in the same room together, and we don't need to. We will be next month, but we don't need to be. So I met some of my new colleagues for the first time on Tuesday. I met my boss for the first time on Tuesday in person. But we've had so many conversations, and this way of talking to each other is,
I'm sorry,
is, for me, is just as good. Just as good.
Imagine managing this guy. I mean, holy crap. That's the worst job in the world. Guy's going to resign within a week. All right. I totally get what you're saying. Efficiency, you can get a lot done. It's a totally different world. Deals are being made completely remotely. I think that's amazing. One thing I would put as a caveat to you, you're actually quite a mature mid-career person. So you've already had that journey where you've built in a lot of network value, a lot of self-confidence, a lot of that type of stuff you've already built in, and you've got that residual thing where you can still, there's like 500 people you can say, right, these people I could talk to. I think young people coming into their career path, totally different story, switching domains, different story, and traditional BD, maybe different story. Anyway, we're talking too much. Let's get some guests onto the show. We're going to change the lineup, folks. We're going to get everybody in at the same time because why not? We're going to bring on Alla Pavlova. Let's bring her on, one of the brain food favorites. Who else have we got here? I hope everyone's like nominated their names properly. There's Fiona. Let's get Fiona on. Cool.
But just while we're getting people on, I mean, that's a very, very good point. So I think... you are right that I'd already built up quite a good network before the pandemic. So that will have created some additional momentum for me. However, that's offset with the fact that, I'm just going to say it, the younger somebody is, the more au fait they are with technology and social media and, you know, video communications and things like that. So, you know, I think that like people coming into the workplace in the last couple of years, our social media and online connectivity is completely, you know, fluent. They're completely fluent in that. So it's offset a little bit with that.
Maybe so. And I think we've got people joining us today that are on different kind of levels of career path, journey, etc. I mean, let's learn from everyone here, because I think everyone should have slightly different perspectives on this. So let's go through for some introductions real quick. Alla, let's go to you first. Who are you? What it is you do?
Hey, everyone. Yeah, my name is Alla. I'm based in Amsterdam. I'm a tech source and recruiter, right now working remote for Riot Games in Hong Kong and Singapore studio. I've been also for 2 years building Slack communities, so super happy to answer any questions about how to organize your first events and how to build this community, so excited to be here.
Great to have you back, Alla. We'll talk about how your Barcelona trip was in a bit, by the way. Sam, you want to go ahead? Oh, you're muted, I think. So yeah.
All right. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we can hear you great.
Perfect, Hung. Thanks for having me on the show. I'm really honored to get to be here today. So I'm Sam. I am currently in between two countries. So I have built up my career so far in Berlin, and I'm in the process of moving to London. I currently lead a talent acquisition team at a company called Urban Sports Club. For those of you in the US and in the UK, it's pretty similar to ClassPass. So it's this platform where you can, as an individual, you can go and explore different forms of sports. And recently I became a freelancer. So I'm really excited to talk about this topic, how I made that transition. And this was all remotely in the pandemic with the help of people who I've never met in real life before.
Yeah, be fascinating. And also the idea of moving to different cities, I think, is a huge thing associated with this, right? So I would say it would be much easier to do from a networking point of view. If you're in office every day, boom, you've got an instant friend network. You're doing it from remote. Like, how do you do that? We'll come back to it. Okay, Senya, who are you? What it is you do?
Yeah, hi, everyone. And Hung, thank you so much for having me back. Very, very excited to be here. So I'm currently based in Dublin, only just relocated here a few weeks ago. So definitely have some points to share on coming to the office and having that kind of networking environment here in terms of kind of relocating to a new place. But yes, I work in technology sales.
Great to have you back, Senya. And Fiona, can you quickly introduce yourself? Who are you? What it is you do?
Sure. Hi, everybody, and thanks for having me on the show, Hung. I'm Fiona Holkyard. I work for Randstad Sourceright, and I head up the talent marketing client service team for EMEA and APAC. And I also changed careers in the pandemic just over 15 months ago, changed companies, and actually met my team in person for the first time 2 weeks ago, including my boss, who obviously I have a fantastic working relationship with, speak to half a dozen times a day, but I'd never met in the room until last week. So yeah, it can work.
I think it can work. Let's explore how to do it, because there's a couple of things I want to just nail in the first instance. So Adam is like very pro sort of, yes, I don't need to see people. I'm actually a bit like that, to be honest. Maybe it's just the age. It's like, I don't want to see people. No, yeah, I could just do it by video. It's much better. Is that true, or are there some problems with that type of way of networking, or is it not optimal, if you like? What are the challenges of trying to network purely this way? Any thoughts on this? Senya, I wonder whether we just go straight with you, because you've also now got like a customer facing job, right? So you've got to interact with people and stuff. You've relocated to different places, quite young in your career as well. What's your thoughts on this, like, shift to remote? Has it damaged networking and relationship building?
Yeah, and actually, this is something that I've been thinking about quite a lot recently, especially with this new relocation. I'm very, very early on in my kind of career path. This is my first real kind of job, in a sense. And I started this remotely completely. And I think kind of having now experienced this office, having experienced the face-to-face interactions, I think it's made a huge difference. I think, you know, coming in with not so much experience, it's really hard to know, you know, what are the day-to-day ways in which people interact with each other even. It's really hard to kind of get a sense of a person, I think, virtually, whereas kind of coming to the office, I think it has made a massive, massive difference. So I'm kind of very pro maybe a hybrid kind of approach. I think face-to-face is essential completely to people, especially in the early stages of their career, when they kind of don't really know what these kind of interactions might look like.
Yeah, very, very interesting. And as you say, Senya, you kind of started the job in a remote setting, and now it's what? It's a voluntary to go in, or is it now you have to go into the office?
Yeah, so at this point, it's voluntary still, but I choose to come in every day, just out of kind of my own preference. I kind of don't mind the commute. And for me, luckily, it isn't very long, but I kind of think that after being remote for so long, I've really missed that human connection almost. And I think now, kind of having been in the office, we have much more of a team environment as well. And I feel like I really have got to know people way more in the past few weeks than I did in the kind of 4 months that I was working remotely.
That is inevitable, isn't it, folks? I mean, what's your thoughts on this, generally speaking? Like, it's faster to get to know someone if you're actually working with them, like, sitting there. You get more information, you're literally spending more time. Do we agree with that? I mean, is that something that we have consensus on, or anyone got a different view? I think we agree. I mean, I've shocked everyone into silence, but I always assume everyone agrees when that happens. But the trade-off is efficiency, isn't it? So Adam has a point as well, in the sense that there is a commute now involved. If you're having these deeper relationships and conversations with people in office, there's an opportunity cost to that, because you're not speaking to maybe two more people that you could have had Zoom calls with or whatnot. So is it a quality versus quantity thing that we're looking at here? Okay, let's go to you, Sam. I'm interested to know your experience, because you've kind of like trying to go to a new city, I think similar journey to Senya perhaps. So you're perhaps starting to interact with people remotely and then doing in person at some point. What are you learning from that experience? And is there a way to do remote sort of networking in a way that's like similar to in-person, or at least, you know, halfway there?
Yeah, I think it depends how you define similar. So like, what kind of goal do you have when you meet someone in person versus virtual? And I think now in virtual, I always have a goal of why I would approach someone. And I always go in with a plan with my questions ready and really show them that I value their time for a specific purpose. Whereas networking in person is very, very much more relaxed. And like less goalless. So to be honest, I just got to London. I haven't been to any events in person here. I haven't tried that. I have tried to get in touch with different people in the TA community so that I can get more familiar with the local community here.
You've totally failed to get in touch with me, Sam. What's going on?
I know we, I'm sorry. But we, yeah, Hung, the last time that we saw each other was almost 3 years ago now at one
don't
of the Berlin
say.
Conferences.
Yeah,
so.
Don't even say, yeah.
Yeah. Haven't got quite back into the groove of going into these in-person events.
You've introduced a really interesting point, agenda versus non-agenda. So in a Zoom call, it's pretty much agenda-driven, isn't it? Like you're not turning up and there's no reason for me to have this thing in my diary, but yeah, let's just talk. And it's like some awkward small talk stuff. It's literally boom, 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 let's get through it. And I've had like Zoom calls with strangers that last no more than 5 minutes, and it's been a super call because it's like, yeah, we've actually agreed stuff and we're actioning this thing. Whereas when you're meeting in person, in office, there's a lot of the conversations you have in that office environment have no agenda at all. Literally, there's no business purpose, but it just builds relationship. And it's maybe hard to engineer that in a remote-only environment, I guess. I mean, or can you? I mean, Adam, have a thought. I mean, Fiona, what are your thoughts on this? Because you're both like leadership folks. Have you tried to engineer this style of, you know, no agenda relationship building in a remote setting?
I mean, I totally think you can do it. I mean, my entire team I've recruited remotely. I have one-to-ones with them, and sometimes we talk about work and sometimes we just chat. You know, similarly, when I meet new contacts or new stakeholders, sometimes, yeah, there's an agenda and, you know, it's efficient. Other times it can be more personal. I genuinely don't think there's a huge difference. I think group conversations can be harder to facilitate in a kind of a Zoom environment because it's hard to know who's going to talk next and you don't have that same natural flow of conversation. You know, we've tried a few Christmas socials and things, and I mean, let's be honest, it's not the same. But I do think, you know, there's you know, the one-to-one relationships can absolutely be as strong. And I think the other thing that, you know, talking, you know, sort of listening to people who've moved locations and, you know, there's that opportunity to meet people in person. I would counter that with the flip side that actually being remote and particularly networking remotely levels the playing field geographically. And from an inclusion and diversity point of view, you know, I'm based in the north of England. I have never been able to make it to as many off the cuff after work drinks events because they don't happen where I live. I don't want to live in, I couldn't do my job now if I had to go into the office. The office is in London. My team are based all over the world. I, you know, if we had to be in person, I literally wouldn't have the job that I've got at the moment. And I think, you know, there's a real equality piece that comes out of the ability to network. You know, I've met so many more people virtually than I'd probably even had the confidence to talk to in person. You know, I might have felt a bit imposter syndrome-y, self-conscious, and you know I'm not new at this. I've forced myself out of my comfort zone, but it's definitely easier to get engaged in a Facebook group or on a virtual chat from the comfort of your own home than to, you know, walk on your own into a room full of strangers and start making conversations. For me, anyway.
There is a gendered component to this as well, isn't it? It's just occurred to me that, you know, again, I'm just spooling back to the last time I was going out and getting hammered was 10 years, 15 years or so ago, right? But that was like not a very male thing to do because obviously this is the UK and like everyone drinks a lot. But it's more like a case of as you get older, inevitably people have different responsibilities at home, and it becomes it's like literally splits away, like the old bloke's still out there, but a woman, if she's got kids, she is not getting hammered, she's not going out and doing the networking. So I think the entire culture historically, culturally, even in this country, maybe you could even call it Northern Europe perhaps, or certainly the British Isles, where it's very drink driven. It's very much getting on it. That kind of disadvantages women as they progress in career. So early career, Senia, I'm sure you're going out and having a great time in Dublin. It's going to be awesome. But as you progress, you know, you hit late 20s, early 30s, maybe even further on, it becomes less and less like the women end up disappearing from the scene, so to speak. And therefore, you have this gendered disadvantage because men continue to build network, whereas women may not. So perhaps the remote is the big equalizer on that. Thoughts on this, folks? It's a bit of a controversial point, so feel free to give me a bit of a heckle on that. Anybody want to add anything to that idea that maybe remote is actually more fair?
Yeah, I can add to that. And I think that it's, if I think back to when I was early career, I mean, I was out almost every night after work, almost every night. And like for, I don't know, first 6 years, and then the next six, it would have been a couple of nights a week, maybe. And the opportunity to meet lots of new people that way and, experience new things is, sorry, that sounds ridiculous, doesn't it? What I just said there, experience new things. The opportunity to meet new people and therefore learn about like what they do and all that kind of thing was, you know, there was only an offline option, and meeting them in the pub or whatever was one of the most important things to do. But, you know, now I don't really go out, probably because of my life stage and, you know, other commitments, but I'm still meeting as many people as I was then because of the opportunity to meet people at lunchtime online, that type of thing. So I think it has. And to your point around the difference between genders and, like, once women have got kids, they are maybe potentially more likely to be, you know, impacted than the man is. I do think it probably, as a non-woman, so I shouldn't be the one answering
the stats to back that up.
It probably helps.
Stats to back it up. Yeah, women are still like primary caregiving. We actually found this out in the sort of the entire shift to remote, because it turned out that women's workload actually got a bit even higher because they didn't lose the primary caregiving responsibilities. They just kept on going, whereas the guys came back and had all this free time because they didn't have to do the commute. So I don't think we can dispute that particular point.
If I think about the roundtables, I run quite a lot of different like roundtables on different streams related to talent acquisition. I think it's probably 2/3 female and 1/3 male that turns up for that. Whereas networking, you know, in a bar at an industry event is going to be the opposite. It's probably going to be 2/3 men and 1/3 women, I would think.
That's very interesting. So it turns out we have a lot of women on this show. What are your thoughts on this? Is it true to say that it's more comfortable to do something at lunchtime than it is on the evening? Is that generally the case? Is that the feeling you have? And obviously that has an impact on the remote versus in-person, because I think basically you don't do remote in the evening, do you? It's like the remote networking in the evening doesn't happen. Remote is daytime. There's another thing we've discovered, is there's a kind of a split as to when you do the networking. So thoughts on this, is it more comfortable to do it like a daytime event rather than a nighttime networking event?
It's more accessible. I don't know whether it's about whether it's more comfortable, but it's definitely more accessible because it's something you can easily do on your lunch break. You don't have to worry about getting somewhere. You know, I would agree about the gender, the difference between the genders. You know, I certainly as a working mum, it's easier if I can do my networking while the kids are at school and have, you know, when I can just focus on work and I can be dedicated to those conversations rather than thinking, okay, you know, if I need to go out in an evening, I need to get somewhere, I need to, you know, make sure that my husband's home to be with the kids. You know, it's easier. But, you know, I think that the comfort side of it is less about evening or daytime, and that's probably more about whether you're someone who's more extroverted and wants to get out there and meet people, which your degree probably at the start of your career is more important, versus someone who you know, perhaps is a bit more introverted and you know, doesn't want to do that sort of stuff by themselves.
Just on that, Fiona, I wonder if you don't need to talk about your specific experience, but actually I wonder if I think about mine, Working from home has actually really rebalanced the amount of time that my wife and I spend with our kids. And we are absolutely equal 50-50. And I wonder if previously we weren't. I was away a lot working. And my wife was away occasionally, but she wasn't away nearly as much as I was. So she would have done probably 70% of the overall, like, looking after our kids, whereas now it's definitely 50-50. I wonder if that's something that's happened, like, across a lot of households, or whether that's just my experience.
Not everyone has a perfect Adam Gordon marriage, you know. It's like
I think the logistics often sat with the woman, even if I, you know, I personally probably socialized for work far more than my husband, but you know, mainly because he's introverted and I'm a bit more extroverted than him, but I still made the arrangements. I was the one who thought, is he home? Is he going to be there? Does he know that he's got to pick up? Where, you know, is it nursery? Is it school? Have they got a gymnastics after, you know, in the evening? You know, I'd have that kind of mental agenda, whether or not I was physically the person looking after the kids. I think that has balanced more because we're both here and we don't go anywhere. So it's a bit easier now.
I want to move on to talk about sort of how to do networking remotely effectively. And Adam, the reason why you're an evangelist on this, and I was going to interrupt you, but you interrupted my interrupt. It was like amazing, like check, like a preemptive strike. But basically, the reason why you love it is because you organize it, right? You're saying, oh, I do all these roundtables. So,
yeah,
great.
Well, again, like, we were talking about LinkedIn events earlier, and I said, you know, I think that's not a load of nonsense for candidate generation. But if you start doing it yourself and make it work for you, how you want it to work, then absolutely it's great. Just incidentally, I'm not against meeting people offline and networking offline. As you know, Ang, I did loads of it before the pandemic. I was everywhere. But and I will go back to doing that, and I do enjoy doing it. But what I don't enjoy is the travel aspect of it. That's just a massive time suck.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt everyone can get rid of the commute. That would be a perfect thing. But let's touch on this. I think the optimal way to network remotely is to set up some sort of space where people come to you, right? Whereas if you don't do that, you have to find these places and you're the person knocking, coming in. And it feels like, as you mentioned, I think Fiona, I think it was you, mentioned that you're the person that has to introduce yourself to bunch of strangers. Like, that's a high pressure situation, isn't it? Ala, let's bring you on this, because you're quite well known for building these online communities. So setting these things up, how easy is it to do? As it strikes me to be like super difficult to actually execute, which is why people don't do them. Can you share us a little bit about your experience on that?
Of course. Probably it's not very popular opinion, but I would say these events, the offline events, were designed by extroverts for extroverts. So I often feel myself like, you know, oh my God, I need to, this is a break. So what are people going to do? So they're going to talk to each other. It's giving me so much, you know, it was some type of uncomfortable format. And I started to look for something that is suitable for me. And as I work with software engineers, that is more suitable for them. And the first step that I did, I started to look for these communities myself. There is a list, I'm going to share the link later. Like, you know, okay, so what are the most popular Discord or Slack communities? I joined them and I made a rule that every week I'm going to send a message in one of them with something useful. So first rule in whenever you join any community is to contribute first and ask later. So I was sending some links for useful, I don't know, like interview tools, the best articles with free books, etc. And that was my first step to build meaningful connections based on the passion, because I'm there because I love tech, but I struggle to just to stand in front of these people and just talk about something. And I don't like drinking alcohol. That's probably also not very popular. So this way. That was the first step. And then when I felt like, okay, I'm in this already communities and I feel like I can give even more. And I started to contacting organizers, like super, super smart people who can share some knowledge on some topics, and started to organize my own events. The first one was really bad. Like, you know, everything was not working. I forgot this, I forgot that. But, you know, after the third or the first event, you feel yourself like, okay, so that's actually working. So you'll be very proud of yourself. And then you see people get connected and things are on the flow. So that was my first experience.
Some really great insight there. Number one, like, you can actually join a community. But I suppose one of the distinction I would sort of raise here is that there's certain online spaces where it's possible to be anonymous, which is these bigger communities where you can just join in, slip in. No one's going to point you out in any way. And this is where you can add the value. But then there's these online networking things, which, yeah, you, like, I just asked you all to introduce yourself, for instance, like, as an example here. So there's no way anybody could have just hid in that way. So I think there's two types of different online experiences, isn't there? So maybe one thing, join a big community, be a lurker, do that, get comfortable with that conversation. That's a great way to do it. And then maybe the next stage is when you end up joining smaller groups like this, where, you know, suddenly you can actually start interacting with people, and it's definitely you. You're a named person, which is, I guess, the kind of the next step from how that works. Any other kind of relationship building tips that you can do as an online only? Ala, just to lean a little bit on what you said there, adding value before the ask. So that's, I think, a pretty basic rule, isn't it? Just add value without expectation of anything. And then people might just say, yeah, that's kind of nice. Thank you. And then they may make note of your name or they follow you in some way. And then they go forward like that. Senia, any thoughts on this? Go ahead.
One thing. I'm very sorry. There are so many books about it, like, you know, that the people, the networking is prospecting, and actually do the very, very opposite. I had to teach myself not to make people as a prospect and consider them as a, I don't know, like a superheroes that I can learn from. It's completely changed the way how I get connected with people. So no prospecting. This is my, like, you know, the golden rule that I can put in front of myself. Like, if anything I've learned, no prospecting.
That's a really good point. So it's a mindset shift as well. And salespeople are kind of really bad at this, where, you know, you're sizing everyone up else up as a mark, aren't you? You're saying, yeah, is this person going to help me close
dollar
the deal?
Dollar signs.
Walking
fees.
Yeah, but you're optimizing this way. I totally get it. But it's counterproductive in this scenario because you're like that person in the party that, you know, is always looking over the person's shoulder for someone more interesting to talk to. And that's like, yeah, this is not how you do it. Okay, Senia, you're really young in your career, but have you learned any things that you could teach us on how to build network online?
I think probably the main thing that I've actually learned in trying to kind of build this network online, maybe kind of a tip for some of the younger people as well, is kind of just being brave and reaching out to people. I think people usually are more willing to chat than you might expect. I think especially coming in as a, you know, a new joiner, not really knowing anyone, I was really intimidated to reach out to people who might be a bit more senior. But I think that most people are always very willing to chat. And I feel like even as a new joiner, a young person, you also have some different insights or something that you can also share. And I think especially kind of that opportunity to connect with people all around the world is such a great thing to do. And I think definitely now is the time to, you know, really make the most of that as well.
I think that's a great point. You've got to have the courage, right? You can't just sit there and hope for networking to happen. This may be a challenge actually for people that are more introverted. I think maybe that's a difference a little bit, like who's the initiator of these connections. But we have to kind of, you're handicapping yourself somewhat if you don't ever do the initiation. And the initiation doesn't have to be a mega ask. I think the main mistake that I see when people try to network with me is they like write an essay that, you know, clearly I can't read. And it's like, I can't respond to what it, I, yeah, tell me what it is you want and probably I can help. Like literally be very clear. on what it is you want, bottom line up front, be nice about it. And then just, you know, if it's a no, it's a no. If it's a rejection, if it's a ignore, it's an ignore, no big deal. But more often than not, you will get surprised. People will say, yeah, sure, I've got 5 minutes. Let's have a chat. Sam, go to you. Any tips that you could give us in remote networking, relationship building?
Yeah, I think the biggest mistake is thinking that just because these on-site activities and networking events aren't happening doesn't mean that you should be trying to network right now. Like with any capital that's worth having, it's built slowly over time. And that's the same with social capital. So like having these little interactions and really recognizing that you don't need to have a super, super deep connection with every single person that you meet. There's still so much power in having these weaker connections, let's say. And just like Xenia said, it's all it takes is the courage to reach out to them. And as long as you show this vulnerability about like you need help somewhere or people want to help other people, then I think usually they're really willing to put in the effort and get back to you. But there's so much power in this, in that online community that you can build. And I really noticed that when I started my freelance career last year and got all this help and all of this courage built up because of people I had never met in real life before.
Yeah, a really important point. Sharing a bit of vulnerability is a powerful thing. People want to help. And also people want to be expert to be able to help, right? It feels good to be able to help. It's a big boost to some sort of like ego that we have. The thing here is that we need to master how to ask questions and get better at asking for help. Because oftentimes people ask a kind of a decontextualized question and it's just thrown out there and it's like, we're not entirely sure. You're forcing the person that wants to help to interrogate further what it is you want. And it's like, that's asking too much already. So be very, very clear what it is you want and what you need that person to do. You'll be surprised at what might happen. Fiona, give us some tips on relationship building from remote.
My microphone off. There we go. I think one thing is to maximize the format that people feel comfortable in. So, you know, some people will want to have a quick connection and then set up a call or set up a hangout or something and have that one-to-one. Other people will just want to WhatsApp you and they're quite happy to continue talking in a written format and will help you more. So I think it's about not kind of assuming that there's one way to network virtually. You know, in person, there probably is one way to network. You go up and you speak to someone, but I think, you know, be mindful again of people operating in different ways. So, and again, from your own point of view, you know, to the point about being brave, I absolutely agree with that. And I think sometimes that can just be about joining someone else's conversation. It doesn't have to be about always instigating something. You can just comment on someone's LinkedIn post, or you could share something. You know, you can start off quite softly, you know, particularly if you're someone who is a bit more introverted and less confident.
That's right. You don't have to be a protagonist in every interaction, right? You don't have to be the main character. You can literally be a person observing a conversation and just popping in with an observation yourself. Like that's like how normal conversations happen anyway. And by the way, on networking, folks, I totally forgot, but we need to do this every week. So let's do it now. Please share your LinkedIn in the chat stream right now, because here is an opportunity for us to all network. And the reason why I do this every week is because I think people that are signed up onto this conversation, listening in, generally speaking, have an interest in the topic. Well, guess what? You're in a group of people that are also interested in topic. Don't let brain food be a bottleneck to stop the conversation when we come off air. So share your LinkedIn's into the chat stream now, or if you're on LinkedIn itself, share it in the comments and just make sure you connect with everyone who has shared a link, and then you've got more people you can talk to.
Now that's a really, really important point around the concept of like a watering hole. So where is it if you're trying to talk to certain types of people, where is it that they go, where is it they hang out? And it's exactly the same online as it is offline. If you're trying to talk to punks offline, you go to a punk bar. If you're trying to talk, you know, if you're into techno, you go to the techno place. If you like football, you go to the football pub or whatever. It's exactly the same online. And, you know, I mean, Alan knows this, of course, because she builds these communities. And as do you, Hung. So there's a reason why Joint Talent has sponsored so many of your things, because you've got a group of people around you who are all interested in things like tech hiring and, you know, the nuances of getting better and better in recruitment. And, you know, I think if I was hiring recruiters, one of the first places that I would come would be to Recruiting Brain Food, because everybody there is there to learn. And, you know, people that learn, they tend to be people that are pretty good at what they do.
That's right. And folks, if you need to give me money, feel free to go ahead and do that. The coffers are open. All you need to, I'll send you the details on how you can do that later. Okay, a quick one in terms of how to, I want to touch on a quick thing Sam said, like, and also Fiona, that it doesn't have a big thing. And in reality is, it's actually quite intimidating when you meet someone for the first time and then start demanding a deep relationship with that person. That's too much too soon, right? Everyone knows this on a personal, level, you know this. So why don't we apply that in a work context? If you're demanding too much early on, that's not going to happen. What you want to do, don't underestimate these like micro events that can help accelerate a relationship. And in fact, I actually studied this at one point scientifically, to try and like measure, can I like accelerate a relationship with people, like a bunch of people that I met recently. And you simply kind of mark like how many engagement events you have with this person, and see whether you can just accelerate it and suddenly, you know, you could mates and all the rest of it. And the reality of it is you can absolutely do that. And these micro events, typically like liking somebody's post or your quick comment here, quick emoji there, or here's something you might be interested in, boom, boom, boom. It doesn't actually take a lot of time before you've suddenly gone into a position where actually you know this person quite well, or it would otherwise have taken quite a long distance of time to get to that level of relationship. Quick counterpoint as well. There's also people that we all know for a long, long time where we have a very shallow relationship because we've not had any events at all, right? It's like you've just known them, but you've not had anything happen in that relationship for years. And guess what? You might have known them for 10 years, but the depth of that relationship is not necessarily as good as someone who you might have had, you know, some amazing couple of days with, or these micro events. So micro events, we've got loads of opportunities to do it. I think it obviously has to be authentic, obviously has to be genuine, but you can do it. You know, especially with the tooling that we have, it's possible to accelerate these relationships. So we're out of time, folks, as we always are. These types of conversations, I do think they should be like, you know, continue in a pub somewhere. And as a matter of fact, guys, you let me know what you think about this. So Brain Food Live is pretty much a broadcast, right? So we can talk, obviously, so we're on screen, but there's like lots of people in the crowd can't. But I was thinking, you know what, would it be something that would be useful if we like migrated it after the hour somewhere else where everyone could like just chat in a more open space? Maybe we could kill the broadcast so it doesn't go off to, you know, different people. It's like pretty much it's a silent spot. And we do something like that. It seems to me that maybe that's something that could be interesting for people to do. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, it could be like two different formats in a way. Like, you know, first you meet for the content. So you share the tips and people who came just for the content so they can stay and learn. And people who came to hang out after and get to know each other so they can be on this second part that is for that. Like, you know, it's like, yeah. So I see you want to say something.
No, I think we need a game, don't we? Like it can't just be, oh, let's get into a room. No, there needs to be some sort of like thing you can play. I think that would be quite cool. Is anyone playing any games? Let me know, you know, that would be quite a cool thing to investigate.
I was asking you to play with us, Iman asked for so many times. Okay, so because it is recorded, right? So I'm challenging Han on playing with us online.
All right. I'm up for it. Let me know, because I've got a lot of traveling coming up, right? Because, you know, I'm in Australia. I guarantee you, though, I'll have lots of empty time because it's such a big country. I'll be like sitting on like the 4-hour car journeys and stuff like that. So I'll totally be playing games. But yeah, invite me to do stuff. I'll be up for it. Okay, we're gonna leave it there, folks. Everyone's got a busy day, so thank you everyone for joining us. So thank you, Sam. Firstly, great to see you. Welcome to London, by the way. Let me know. I'm back kind of in May, so if you're around and then just let me know if you want to catch up for a coffee or something. Great to see you. And Senya, wonderful to see you. Go get him in that new job in Dublin. Hope you enjoy it. Wonderful to get your perspective as always. And yeah, we'll get you back at some other point in the show, hopefully. You have a very good weekend. Fiona, great to see you. Great to make your debut, I think, on BrainFood Live. So thank you for joining us. And yeah, we'll get you back at some other point as well.
Thank you.
Cool. And Ala Pavlova, great to see you. And yeah, thank you for joining, as always. You know, great to get your contribution, Ala. And I'm sure, you know, we should probably do a more focused, like, online community thing as well at some point, at some later stage. All right, listen, you have a good weekend. I'll see you soon, okay? Cool. Wasn't that great, guys? A really great conversation as usual. It's one of those where these things should be like 2-3 hours long. It shouldn't be 1 hour. Too much to go into. Okay, folks, that's about it for now. I need to tell everybody, by the way, those of you still listening, I'm going to be back on air in about an hour's time for the International Recruiters event. So this is a charitable event which myself and Elena Falk, Jan Tegzi, Irina Shimeva and Kasia Tang are getting together to do some fundraising for the displaced people of Ukraine. So if you have some moments and sort of an hour or so free and you want to kind of pay attention to those amazing sources, make sure you go ahead and join that. And I'll see you there. Otherwise, we're going to miss BrainFood Live next week because I've got a big event on Thursday. I'll be presenting and keynoting on that. I think I'll probably be completely knackered on Friday, so I'm actually going to have a break, and then we're back with BrainFood Live on, I think, midweek in sort of middle of April. So anyway, if you enjoyed the show, follow the channel, and we'll see you soon. Thanks for watching.